Welcome to the Student Press Law Center podcast for September 2010, a monthly rundown of news about legal developments affecting the student media. The Student Press Law Center is a nonprofit source of information and advocacy for the student media, and we work to break down the barriers that prevent college and high school journalists from doing their best work. For more information about the center, go to www.splc.org. I'm Frank Lomonti, Executive Director of the Student Press Law Center. Thanks for joining us. Well, advocates for the student media have been trying for decades to persuade school boards and school superintendents that exercising tight administrative control over what gets published in the student media diminishes the educational value of journalism. Students who know that their work will go through a gauntlet of censorship invariably wind up censoring themselves, which makes their publications much less interesting to read and much less rewarding for them to work on. Working on a heavily censored publication prepares students for the professional world about as well as playing powder puff touch football would prepare students for playing in the NFL. As important as it is for school administrators to hear this message from those who know journalism best, it is more important still for them to hear it from their own colleagues. When people who have been principals or superintendents or school board members can personally attest to the value of uncensored journalism, their word carries extra credibility. Well, with us today is one of those former school board members, Tyler Buller, who has the distinction of having been elected to the Johnson, Iowa School Board while he was still an undergraduate student at Drake University. Mr. Buller, whose term on the school board has ended and who is now enrolled in law school, is the author of a very thorough and persuasive article about the value of scholastic journalism that's entitled Stirring the Pot. And that article was just recently published in the American School Board Journal. With Mr. Buller to talk about the significance of laws and policies that protect the safety of student journalists and of the teachers who work with them is Leslie Shipp, who teaches journalism and advises the student newspaper, The Black and White, at Iowa's Johnston High School. Ms. Shipp is a beneficiary, actually, of one of the policies that Mr. Buller helped to push through the board, a policy that is now in some danger of being repealed, that assures journalism advisors that they will not be retaliated against for what their students publish. Well, Tyler Buller and Leslie Shipp, thank you both for being here with us, and I would like to start with Mr. Buller. If you could please just start off by describing a little bit about the article that you recently published in the American School Board Journal and especially why you thought it was important for that particular reading audience to read it.
Absolutely, Frank. I think you hit the nail on the head when you said it's important for this audience to hear it because school board members usually only hear about when something bad happens for a student newspaper. They hear about something controversial or something that has someone upset. They never hear about the great things that student journalists are doing. So that was part of my goal in writing this, was to point out that if you adopt policies that are good for student journalists, you're going to benefit everyone in the community. The district will be less liable to lawsuits. The students will be better informed. They'll get a better education. Administrators will have something concrete to point to when parents complain to them. And teachers will actually get to perform to the best of their abilities and teach the best that they can. The thing about these policies that benefit students is that really they benefit everyone that's involved in education, and that's something that's really hard for school board members to understand.
Well, expand on that a little bit, because you are a product of student journalism. You're a person who worked in scholastic journalism at the high school level, obviously feels that it was beneficial to you. What are some of the maybe overlooked or underappreciated benefits of that educational experience?
Certainly for me, I think almost all of the writing skills I've developed, most of the interpersonal skills I've pulled together, working with people in a group come from my time in high school and college newspaper. There isn't a class that they'll sit you down and say, here's how you manage a staff of 30 people. In a newspaper situation, an editor or someone in charge will be put in that situation, and the skills they pick up absolutely cannot be taught in a class because they're real-world skills that will hopefully help people get jobs in the future. A lot of people also don't understand, you know, how difficult it is for 13, 14, 15, 16-year-old kids to walk up to an adult, start asking them questions, interview them, and put together an article that's going to go maybe more in-depth into the school community than your local newspaper would. I know for us, a lot of the time, the Des Moines Register, which is our biggest daily in Iowa, will cover a local school board maybe once or twice a week with an article. A student newspaper will have maybe two or three pages of news coverage dedicated to the school district every time they publish an issue. So all of these things that would normally kind of escape public attention are focused on in these student publications.
Yeah, that's a really, really, I think, terrific point that, bears emphasizing, is that we're seeing a shrinkage in the professional journalism ranks. We're seeing newspapers contract their space, and one of the casualties of that has been education coverage. So it certainly is the case, maybe not in a district as big as Des Moines, Iowa, but certainly when you get outside of the major metropolitan areas, it's certainly the case that it may be that the only reporter going to the school board on a regular basis and writing about it on a regular basis is someone at a student publication. We can't necessarily count anymore on the fact that a professional publication is going to be fully staffed to be able to do that. So I think that's a very valuable point. Let me ask you to talk specifically about your work as a school board member and your efforts to put in place policies that are protective of student journalism. Well, what resistance did you encounter there, and how were you able to overcome it?
Certainly, I think we saw resistance from a couple of different angles, and one of the big ones that I've always run into with school board members and administrators is that they don't understand what the function of the student press is. A lot of people think, you know, these student reporters are out to get them or out to make them look like they don't know what they're doing, out to make them look like they're trying to do something to hurt students, but most of the time, these student journalists are just trying to do a good job, trying to cover the news that, like we said earlier, maybe no one else is covering. So the hardest thing to do is actually explain to school board members what a student newspaper does. And then once you get there, the next task is explaining to them what the special circumstances are with First Amendment and state statute issues with a high school newspaper. I know I've heard from administrators and school board members that they had no idea that Iowa had an anti-Hazelwood law, and they thought that they should be able to tell student journalists what they can write, that they should only write positive stories, or they should cover this but shouldn't cover that. So the hardest thing to do is actually get people educated about what's going on. So that's what I started to do in October of 2008, was try and explain what all of these issues were and see if there was something we could do about it. Just a couple months before this was happening, California had passed its advisor protection statute. So there's been a little bit of news coverage about that to kind of influence the direction I tried to take the conversation. A lot of the times you won't see a whole lot of student press issue coverage in the major news outlets. And here we had all these big stories from the New York Times, LA Times talking about this issue. So I tried to bring that to the board and explain to them, other people are talking about this. Is this something we should address?
Well, and I'm so glad that you mentioned, because it does bear emphasizing, that Iowa is one of seven states in the country that has what is called an anti-Hazelwood law. In other words, a law that restores the student press to basically the status that it always had before the Supreme Court's 1988 Hazelwood versus Kollmeyer decision. That is to say that in Iowa and in the other states that have anti-Hazelwood statutes, the students have the level of protection in their publications that is afforded to them by the Supreme Court's Tinker case, the landmark student speech case. Not the same level of protection, we should point out, that the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times would have, but the ability to decide what they publish up to the point where what they publish is either unlawful or threatens to disrupt the school. And the experience in states like Iowa has been generally quite positive, that in fact there's not a significant negative impact, and we've had those statutes around for some 35 years dating back to California in the 70s. Let me ask you. Let's switch to Leslie Schiff right now, and just by way of introduction, just tell us a little bit about your own journalism program. How many students are working in it? How often do they publish? So on.
At Johnston, we do a yearbook that obviously publishes yearly, and we also do a newspaper that publishes normally about nine times a year. I have approximately 50 or so students in a one-semester journalism course that most students take before they are able to join newspaper or yearbook. And in the newspaper and yearbook staff classes, we have about 65 kids normally among all of the classes.
Well, how does it impact you, if it impacts you at all, to know that you are teaching journalism and advising in a state that has a student press rights law and in a district that has a policy on the books that protects the job security of the advisor?
I think I'm very lucky. The law that you've been referring to in Iowa, it's Iowa Code 280.22, specifically says in one part that students are in control of student publications. They do the assigning and the editing of all of the work, and that the advisor is what the name entails. The advisor is an advisor. And it also specifically says in there that if any school official tampers with, changes, meddles in anything, then that makes the school and possibly the advisor liable. If that doesn't happen, if it's solely controlled by students, then the school is not liable for anything that happens. And I think that's a very hard thing to explain to people. I think Tyler had some experience with that legally speaking, it's a better legal option to have students in control of whatever student publication, because that relieves the liability of the school and the advisor. So I feel very, very lucky. And when you think about other things that have happened in other states here recently and in past history too, I'm very lucky in Iowa and in this district to have that kind of support.
Yeah. And do you see the results? Do you see a visible payoff in the kind of journalism that the students are able to do with that level of protection?
Absolutely. I know that we have been to different national journalism conventions where students from other schools in Hazelwood states will ask our students, how were you able to print something like that on a variety of topics? And the students from Johnson will explain, we're a tinker state. We have anti-Hazelwood legislation, which means, you know, we're in control of the paper. We decide what we're going to do. And I find when I talk with other advisors from different states that they're amazed that we are able to cover the important topics to students in our community that we're able to do.
Well, what would you say, Leslie Schiff, to people who think that protecting student journalists and protecting their advisors is going to lead to journalism run amok, uncontrolled, irresponsible journalism by inmates running the asylum, to use the term that school districts will sometimes use?
There are a couple of points about that, and you've kind of alluded to this already. One of my favorite analogies is sports. We allow students to go out and make choices on sports in sports competitions. For example, I'm a boys tennis coach, and I wouldn't go out and serve for my tennis player if he's double faulting. He has to figure out what he's going to do, and I advise him or coach him. And I think the same thing should happen in a student publication. It should be like a coaching experience. It's not me or another school official doing, or a parent or whomever doing the work for the students, because they're not going to learn if somebody else is doing the work. And the other point to make is one of the purposes of the American school system is to teach democracy. And being on a newspaper or yearbook staff is the best way to teach democracy, because you're practicing it. You're not reading about it in a book or listening to a lecture. You're actually practicing different rights of the Constitution. And I think it's a way of teaching and a way of learning that has an impact on a student for the rest of his or her life.
Let me sort of hand that same question off to Tyler Buller. What would you say, and you've said it very well in your article, what would you say to the school administrator who is saying, look, these are just kids. You're going to turn them loose with a printing press? Just think of the damage they can cause.
I think Leslie talked about pretty much all of the issues that we always run into talking to administrators and school board officials. They'll make some kind of argument like the principal is the publisher of the newspaper, so he should be able to tell the CEO what to do. And in Iowa and other anti-Hazelwood states, that's not the situation at all. The students are the CEO of the newspaper, and the advisor's job is to act like a consultant, to tell them, you know, this is the best way to put your product out there. If it was a company like GM, the advisor's job would be to say, this is how you sell your product, and these are the laws you should be aware of. And a well-functioning newspaper staff would work exactly like that. Something else that I think Leslie mentioned was, if the school is going to start interfering with these different issues, their liability increases exponentially. If the students were to publish a story that maybe someone decided they thought might be libelous, the student newspaper is liable. But if the advisor or even the principal rewrote part of that article because they didn't like the content, then the school district would have liability for that.
Sure. Well, just by way of wrap-up, since you've had some success in this area, what tips or suggestions might you give to people? I'm working in my own community, let's say, and I'd like to see my school board or my school district enact a policy like the one in Johnston that's more protective of journalism and that's protective of our journalism teachers.
I think the most important thing is to kind of rally your troops, see who actually supports this idea. And something we found in Johnston was some of the biggest cheerleaders of this policy were alumni from the student papers that had gone on to do some great things. A congressman's press secretary, a deputy director for public television, some other folks signed on to this letter we submitted to the board that I thought was fairly compelling, because here you have all of these students who lived and breathed this world for 4 years in high school and can talk about how important it is to have policies that actually benefit that work, that let them get the education, that let them be so successful in their lives. The other big issue, and we briefly discussed this earlier, was kind of speaking the language of school board members. They won't understand necessarily something fuzzy like the First Amendment, Hazelwood, or Tinker Standard, but they will understand if you talk to them about the coach can't walk onto the field and start playing quarterback. They'll understand the comparison that a newspaper is its own CEO. They publish the articles, and the advisor can't just write whatever she wants in there. The other thing that I think is especially important is that students have to be covering school boards and what they're doing. It's very hard, and I heard this from several people on the board, to take students seriously when you've never seen them in the boardroom writing about what the school board's doing. I think that's something student journalists often do a good job of, but could do it a lot more.
Well, that's terrific, terrific advice, and we second that motion. Every school newspaper ought to have a beat writer who's out there covering the school board, maybe more than one, and they ought to develop those relationships before they find that they need the relationship, because then it's too late to start. So that's a terrific suggestion, and I want to thank Tyler Buller and Leslie Shepp for being with us today on the SPLC podcast, and especially thank you for the terrific article, Stirring the Pot, from the American School Boards Journal. You can find a copy of Tyler Buller's article on the classroom resources section of the newly redesigned www.splc.org website. That's www.splc.org, where you'll also find news, reference materials, lesson plans, and much more that we hope that you will enjoy and share. We hope that you'll subscribe to the RSS feed for SPLC news alerts, so become a fan of the Student Press Law Center on Facebook, and follow SPLC_org on Twitter. If you're a student journalist or journalism educator with any question about your legal rights, please call the SPLC hotline at 703-807-1904 or email us at splc@splc.org. Thanks again to our guests, Leslie Shipp and Tyler Buller, and thanks to you for listening.